Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Oh, I'm bad. Amazing guy.
He's business's bad boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's my pleasure as always. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we've got some good stuff lined up for you straight ahead. John Steele Gordon is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. John is the author of An Empire of Wealth, The Epic History of American Economic Power, and I found him through an article that he wrote in the Wall Street Journal about, and the title of the article is Why Government Can't Run a Business. Politicians need headlines, executives need profits. And I wanted to introduce him to you and get him to talk to us a little bit about his thoughts on what's going on right now. Folks, there's a major resetting of so much of our world right now in America, and I want to get John to help us with that. John Steele Gordon, welcome to the show.
I'm delighted to be here.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on your book. Congratulations on the article in the Wall Street Journal.
Thank you.
We were promised change, John. We're getting it, aren't we?
The Obama administration is certainly trying to bring it about, yes.
Well, talk to us about that. I mean, change, we just got through having an interview with the legendary Ken Blanchard. His new book is called Who Killed Change? And he's talking obviously about affecting change inside of a business. How, you know, not just either not changing or changing poorly, but instead of doing what should be done, which is leading change. But what we got going on right now in our industries and in our government, that's not even what we're talking about, is it?
Well, no, but you know, change is it's very easy to talk about. In a campaign in glittering generalities.
Right.
Because everybody knows that the world isn't perfect, and therefore we want to change it to make it better. But then when you get elected and you have to get down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, putting it down on paper, this is what we're going to do, well, suddenly lobbyists come out of the woodwork, and congressmen, you know, fear for their own political survival, suddenly become much less interested in change.
Right.
I mean, the power of the status quo is always enormous.
Here's what gets me about government, and I'm talking, and when I talk about this, John, I'm not talking Republican or Democrat. I'm talking about the political class. That's who I'm taking on right now and have been now for, well, really since I've been doing my show for almost 12 years. I remember, you may get a kick out of this, my first semester in the very first class I ever took in college as a freshman, the very first words out of my professor's mouth was Republicans and Democrats. There's not a nickel's worth of difference between them. And I remember thinking, he's crazy. What's wrong with him? But as I've gotten older, I've decided that to a large degree, he may be right. He was probably right. But what I'm talking about with the political class is when something doesn't work, there probably was already a law or a regulation for that that just wasn't properly applied. But instead of going back and saying, okay, let's fix that application, they want to create a whole new bureau. And the best case in point is Sarbanes-Oxley. What do you think?
Well, I think Sarbanes-Oxley is certainly a reach too far. It is, you know, remember, politicians, liberal, conservative, or moderate, always need headlines. They want to be seen to do something, even if basically nothing needs to be done.
And even if what they do is going to hurt something.
Right, because that's always speculative.
Right.
Whereas, you know, the headline, you know, is Senator Snoot moves on widget crisis. That's a good headline.
Right, right.
But Senator Snoot does nothing on widget crisis is a terrible headline. And therefore, Senator Snoot feels compelled to do something, even when the best thing to do is let the market or whatever work itself out.
Well, and another example, and folks, you hear this when you hear politicians speak. You'll never hear a politician speak more than 90 seconds without injecting the word jobs, as if they actually knew how to create jobs or prevent jobs from being created.
Yeah, they're also very fond of the word children.
Well, they like children too, but in my world, jobs is the biggie, or small business. They invoke the name small business like they really knew what that's all about. And it really irritates me when they do that, because as you say, all they're doing is getting headlines and they're not really contributing anything. When we come back, folks, I'm going to get John Cyril Gordon to talk to us about, get his ideas on some of the overreaching that he thinks, and I agree, is happening right now in industries, financial industry, automobile industry, and more coming. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for hanging out on my website and checking it out, using it to your advantage, asking questions, reading my blog, subscribing to my free newsletter, listening to interviews, reading articles, lots of stuff there. 5 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. We got something you can read, listen to, or ask a question about on our website. And if we don't have the answers, we know somebody who does. So check it out, smallbusinessadvocate.com. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. John Steele Gordon is our guest and our new friend, soon-to-be old friend. He's the author of An Empire of Wealth. Recently wrote an article that was published in the Journal, the Wall Street Journal, called Why Governments Can't Run a Business. And John, government, you list a number of reasons why governments can't run business. I want you to tick down through. You've already mentioned one of them, but talk to us a little bit about why the government trying to get involved in the automobile industry, the financial services industry, this is a fool's errand, isn't it?
Well, in many ways, yes, because, for one thing, government is structured. I mean, the founding fathers designed it to be inefficient in order to prevent tyranny.
Right.
Whereas a corporation is basically a benevolent despotism.
Right.
The CEO runs the show and does pretty much what he wants under the direction of the board of directors, which can always fire him.
Right.
But otherwise, the board of directors doesn't, meddle. And whereas in the federal government, you have 535 members of Congress, each and every one of whom is going to meddle.
Well, and see, when you talk about despotism, what that means is everything isn't going to be fair. Everything isn't going to be perfect. Everything isn't going to be equitable 100% for everybody. There are going to be, it's just the nature of the marketplace, there are going to be some winners and losers. Government can't stand that, can they?
Well, because government isn't designed to do that.
Right.
Government does what it does very well. I mean, the American federal government is the most successful national government in the world.
Our constitution is older
than any constitution in the world, with the exception of the state of Massachusetts, which is about 5 years older.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've done something right, but it's not designed to run businesses.
Right. And you also talk about, you mentioned earlier, politicians need headlines. And here's one of the most important things, I think, the point you made, and that's that governments use other people's money.
Exactly. Governments can't go broke, and the corporation certainly can, and that makes the people who are running the corporation much more cautious about spending.
John, you said something that really, I really wish you wouldn't tempt fate like that.
What was that?
You said governments can't go broke.
Well, in the sense of Chapter 11.
I know, but when you say things like that, it really tempts fate, I think, and that's a dangerous statement to make.
Well, because governments can always print money, which corporations can't do.
Right. What do you think about what the government has done with regard to the automobile industry? It's the most obvious. The automobile industry and the financial services industry, both of those, to a large degree, have just been nationalized, haven't they?
Well, I think the financial service industries have been nationalized only in one sense. In fact, you know, 10 of the biggest banks are getting out from underneath the government control by paying back the TARP funds.
Right.
The automobile, the big three, well, the big two, Chrysler and General Motors, have been essentially taken over by the government, who are now the major shareholders in both those companies. And that is, I think, is not going to work terribly well. I would have been much preferable to have them both just go through bankruptcy, because the, you know, the assets would have been there, the factories would have been there, the machineries would have been there, and those would have moved into stronger hands.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, where they've moved mostly is to the United Auto workers.
Right, exactly. Well, see, I was telling somebody that I'd like to own the concession for the audience seats in the negotiating table when the union wants to come up for renewal again.
Yeah, they'll be negotiating with themselves.
Don't you think I can sell tickets to that?
I think so.
I'd want to watch that, wouldn't you?
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think, where's all this going to go, John?
Well, I think, you know, the people are basically sensible in the long term. I mean, they're easily misled in the short term, but as Lincoln said, you know, you can't do it, can't fool everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll realize that it's these kinds of things don't work terribly well, and I think, you know, if General Motors and Chrysler turn out to be big successes, well, then Obama's going to succeed and what have you. If they turn out to be money pits, well, then he's going to have to take responsibility for it.
John, one of the things, though, you know, you used the name Obama, and he's the guy in charge right now, but before he became president, we had a guy named Bush who was moving in very similar directions. Did the Republican and a Democrat both, are they both setting some ugly precedents?
Well, I think George Bush did much better in foreign policy than he did in domestic policy.
Right.
And I think in 10 years he will have been shown to what he did in the Middle East was a very positive development. But in domestically, he didn't exercise his veto pen nearly as often.
Almost never.
Almost
but in,
never,
term, but in terms
lost
of the fall
in 2007, as a matter of fact,
in the terms of the fall of 08, though, didn't he pretty much establish a precedent upon which Obama could continue?
Well, in the fall of 2008, in September and October, the situation was really, really, really scary.
Yeah.
For anybody who knows anything about the financial world, it looked like everything was going to collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And we were unprecedented times, and we didn't have time to sit around and discuss philosophy.
Right.
We had to take action in order to show that this was not going to happen, and he succeeded in doing that.
Hold on to that thought. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and wrap up with John Steele Gordon, the author of An Empire of Wealth. Stay with us. Bit of Stones bringing us back. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. John Steele Gordon is our guest, our new friend, but he's going to be an old friend because now that we know where he is, you know, we're like the Hotel California around here, folks. Once we find you and we find out that you got good stuff, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And I'm afraid John Steele Gordon has fallen in amongst us here, and we're going to hang on to him. His book is called An Empire of Wealth. And, John, I want you to tell us where it's available. Tell us how we can find you online.
Well, you can find me online at www.johnsteelgordon.com.
Steel with an E. On the
with
end.
An E. And you can buy the book at Amazon, or any bookstore will be more than happy to order it for you.
Yeah, so check that out, folks. It's outstanding. John, with that in mind, I want you to... The book is about the history of the economy, the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, history is being written writ large. You got to believe, John, that 100 years from now, if they're still writing history about America 100 years from now, this is going to be a big, big chapter in your great-grandson's book about this period. And so talk to us about the history of the economy, overlay what the unprecedented things that are going on right now, almost bizarro world things to me, and where you think all this is going to take us.
Well, it's certainly been the most interesting year and a half since the early 1930s. Now, it's not nearly as bad as the 1930s in terms of the standard of living and the unemployment, at least not yet. Remember, in 1933, we had unemployment that was over 25%,
right.
About 9.4%. And the country is infinitely richer today than it was mm-hmm. 75 years ago. But still, it has been a remarkable period, fascinating for an economic historian. And I'm an optimist. Nobody has ever made money selling America short in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we came through 1933 in flying colors. I mean, it took a while, but, you know, we did it. And it emerged much bigger and stronger and richer than we had been before. And I have no doubt whatever that we'll do it again this time.
Hopefully it won't take a war to turn it around, though.
Hopefully it won't take World War III to turn it around.
Yeah. So, give us, you look into your Gordon crystal ball there and see where you think, is the economy going to look more like what President Obama wants it to look like? Or is, you know, with all these czars that he has, is there going to be a revolution against those czars? And is the marketplace going to reclaim itself?
I certainly hope so. We're the most market-oriented country in the world, and that's been a very winning philosophy for 200 years now, and I don't think we're going to lose that. It's going to be a tussle, but it's, I think, basically Americans define freedom as including the freedom to earn one's money as one will, mm-hmm. under the rule of law, of course, and to make their own economic decisions, not have some czar in Washington. You know, when you think about it, czar is an odd phrase to use.
It's awful.
In the American lexicon. I mean, we fought a revolution to get rid of a czar.
Right.
Called George III, although
right.
he, of course, wasn't nearly as powerful as the Russian czars.
Right.
And, yeah, we don't want czars, thank you very much. We can run our own line.
But I heard somebody tick off, there's like 21 czars now.
It's something like that, which is, again, it's a sort of a contradiction in terms, because a czar is the all-powerful, the
right.
one person who runs everything.
But in their world, they are. The czars are, and
in some ways, of course, these czars are a way of deflecting responsibility from Obama.
But isn't it going to be, don't you think that there's a possibility that small business owners and other people who love our free market economy, with appropriate government regulation, not overbearing, and certainly not nationalization, don't you think that there could be a revolution in the offing, and I'm not talking violent?
Well, I think there'll be an upswelling of demand for self-reliance and self-responsibility.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether you're going to be able to call that a revolution.
Well,
that's a pretty powerful word.
I know it is.
Ask the Ayatollahs in Iran.
but as I say, though, I'm not talking violent. I'm just mean, you know, just from the standpoint of with the vote, a revolutionary vote.
Well, I think you might be 2010 might be a very interesting election. I think
yeah.
you will find that, I mean, traditionally a president who wins big loses support in the first off-year election,
and
Ronald
yeah.
Reagan did in 1982,
yep.
for instance.
Yep, exactly.
But
yeah,
I think that's going to happen this year,
yeah.
or next year, I mean.
Hey, John, I got to wrap it up. Will you come back another day?
I'd be delighted anytime.
I've enjoyed having you here.
I've been enjoyed being here.
We'll do it again. Thank you very much. John Steele Gordon, ladies and gentlemen. An Empire of Wealth is his book. You need to check that out. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blessingame. This program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.